morning, everybody. So Ben Jimenez was going to give this message. I was able to talk to him on the phone for a long time yesterday. Between coughs, he was able to share a lot of his points. And so a lot of what I'm going to say is actually what he wanted to share with you guys. There's some really important parts that I'm going to say just like he wanted. And so I give him a lot of the credit. Other credit to the commentaries and the message I listened to, so I can't take much credit today. So we're in Matthew chapter 12, I think. Matthew chapter 12, so you can open your Bibles there. We'll be looking at verses 1 through 21. Matthew 12. Last week, in chapter 11, we read the final verses in chapter 11. I'm going to read them, and I really see those verses as an introduction to this passage. And I'm actually, at the end of this passage, I'm planning to go back and read these verses again. And I think they're going to have even more meaning by the end of this passage today. So I'm going to start out going back to Matthew chapter 11. Verse 28, Matthew 11, 28. Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. A huge amount of meaning in those verses. And I think as we go through today, it's almost like more of a commentary on those particular verses. I think Jesus meant a lot when he said that. Okay, Matthew chapter 12, verse 1. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples became hungry and began to pick the heads of grain and eat. But when the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, "Look, your disciples do what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath." We're going to see in this passage, Jesus and his disciples are going to confront the Pharisees. There's been tension building between Jesus and the religious leaders. The tension has been rising in Matthew, and this chapter, I do believe, is the climax of that tension, and we're going to see a major turning point in this chapter that has to do with Jesus and the Pharisees. He's going to get very confrontational to them and force them to see what they're going to do. So it's a Sabbath. They're walking through the grain field. The disciples are hungry. They grab some. They probably roll it around in their hands. They probably blow off the chaff, and then they eat it or something like that. Well, apparently that broke some of the laws of the Pharisees. And the Pharisees, they had rules about the Sabbath. Now, God instituted the Sabbath, and he had rules about it. But the religious leaders over the years had added more rules and more rules. And there were so many rules, they had to add more rules about how to obey the rules that are supposed to help you know the rules, that you could follow the rules. And somewhere along there was the Sabbath that God instituted. Well, they had so many rules, it was about impossible for anyone to really even know all of the rules. And it's really true. And so the Pharisees became the experts on the Sabbath. And if you wanted to know what to do on the Sabbath, you're a Jew at the time, there's no way that you could really know. There's just too much. You had to go to the Pharisees, and they could tell you what to do. So you watched them, you did what they did, because they were the spiritual people, and they could tell you. And they could tell you whatever they wanted, because there's so many rules, there's probably a rule for everything. Maybe they were breaking 10 rules by walking through the grain field on the Sabbath might have been breaking rules. And how dare you actually rub it like that on the Sabbath. That might be breaking the laws of the Sabbath too. And then blowing on it, that's work. That might be breaking the Sabbath. And then eating it, how many times did you chew it? I don't know. I mean, really, there were so many rules on the Sabbath, it was crazy. And they were probably breaking many of them. We don't even know exactly. It is interesting, Deuteronomy 23:25 says, and I just find the irony of God, you know, back when he gave the law, that particular verse says that you can walk through a grain field and you can grab some grain and you can eat it. It says it in that verse. God put that in Deuteronomy 23:25. And Jesus knew that. I'm surprised he didn't mention that. But they can do what they were doing. And it says exactly that, that they can. So obviously the Pharisees were far away from God's idea of the Sabbath. They were 20 steps down the road of going into just a human-made religion. They had added all their stuff to it, the Sabbath, and they wanted people to follow that. And here we have kind of a little picture of human-made religion, not the religion that God set up on the Sabbath, but people, human beings, adding their own laws and regulations. They had so many regulations, the Sabbath became a burden to the people of Israel, not a day of rest, but a day of burden, and it really was a burden to them. What was it that Jesus just said back in Matthew 11? Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden. From doing all this Sabbath stuff that the Pharisees are trying to get you to do? Are you tired of all that? Would you like to get back to God? Come to me, and I will give you rest, a true Sabbath rest found in Jesus Christ. Verse 3. But he said to them, have you not read what David did? And you know, we could stop right there. The Pharisees, they were out in the grain field. How did the Pharisees know we're in the grain field, by the way? Were they crouching down in the wheat with their binoculars, looking for someone who might be breaking the Sabbath? You almost get the feeling that they were. And did Jesus know they were watching? Sure. Maybe he said, hey guys, get some grain. To set the whole thing up. They greatly offended the Pharisees by doing this. And now, if you really want to offend a Pharisee, you say something like, have you not read what David did? All the Jews knew about David. He was one of their favorite people in history. Even the unread Jews knew all about David. The Pharisees would be experts on every letter written about David. And for you to say, hey guys, have you not read about David? That would get their blood boiling. They would get very mad about this. I wonder if they didn't even listen to the rest of what he had to say here, because the Pharisees were used to people coming and saying, tell us about Davis. Tell us all of your great wisdom, Pharisees. Tell us about things. And Jesus says, don't you guys know? Haven't you ever read about David? When he became hungry, he and his companions, how he entered the house of God, and they ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those with him, but for the priests alone. So there's a story back in 1 Samuel. David's on the run from Saul. At this point in time, there's a transition going on. David should be the rightful king by this time of Israel. Saul's saying no, and there's a bunch of weird things that happen. But in the whole story, and David isn't perfect in this, he even lies in this story, but overall, David's a good guy who loves the Lord, and his men with him, and they're serving the Lord, and God cared for David and his men, and God provided food for them to eat. Now they went into the temple, and they ate the consecrated bread, which they weren't supposed to do. That was a wrong thing to do. But yet, God didn't say it was wrong at the time. Apparently, God actually cares about people. He cares about people that are starving and hungry. And rather than have the bread sitting in the temple just being a picture of something, he could use it to actually help people eat and stay alive. And that was important. God cares about people. And I think that might be the main point of this entire passage, actually, today. God actually cares about people. He has compassion. If people are starving, he would like to feed them. Rather than some religious loaf sitting somewhere you could look at, maybe at that point in time it was better that people were able to actually eat it. Jesus points out this. It is interesting that Jesus is pointing this out. Who was David? He was the king, a rightful king, rejected by the Israel leaders of the day, and so he was hungry and ate bread in a way that looked like it might not be right. Well, what situation do we have here? Jesus, the rightful king of Israel, being rejected by the leaders of Israel, and he's hungry. And him and his men, what do? They eat some wheat, which might look wrong to some people. Interesting situation we have. Verse 5, or have you not read in the law, Ooh. They did something on the Sabbath, which was annoying to the Pharisees. They said, haven't you read about David? That really got them mad. And then, if you want to get a Pharisee really, really boiling mad, what else do you say? Have you not read in the law? They were supposed to be the experts on everything. And if anyone would know anything about the law, you go to the Pharisees and ask them, tell us about the law, Pharisees. Tell us what to do. And Jesus says, haven't you read the law? They were not used to someone confronting them like this. And I'm sure it made them mad. Like I said, I doubt they even really listened to what else he had to say. They probably were just so mad that he had the gall to say that. Have you not read that on the Sabbath, the priests in the temple break the Sabbath and are innocent? On the Sabbath, God did say that there's certain things you're not supposed to do, but he also said the priests were supposed to do things on the Sabbath. They worked, and it was God who told them to work. So there's something more going on here about the Sabbath. And you know, I'm not saying I totally understand it myself, and I definitely haven't had time to study it a lot, but there's something more here. The Sabbath isn't just a list of rules for the sake of rules and regulations, and that's the end of the story. Jesus is saying there's something more going on here. The priests had work to do, and what was it, the work? You know, the work of the priests was to help people come to God. They were to help people and God come together. They were doing sacrifices to make things right between God and people. That's an important work. Is that a good thing to do on the Sabbath? To help people draw closer to God? It was, and God said it was, and so they could do that work. Verse 6, but I say to you, has he already offended them? Are you guys getting this? Has Jesus offended the Pharisees? Yes, several times over, and we've just begun. Here we go, verse 6. But I say to you that something greater than the temple is here. He is going 20 steps further than everything he was just talking about. He's saying, you think getting some wheat is a big deal? I'm going to tell you something much greater than that. Something that greater than the temple is here. What was the temple all about? The temple was the one place on the face of this earth where God met with humans. One place. And there was a sacrificial system. There was a whole thing set up. A lot of our Old Testament, there's a ton in there all about the temple, how to build it, what's supposed to be in it, how to use it, and it's the one place on earth where God met with men. One place. When Jesus says something greater than the temple is here, what does that mean? Greater than the temple. Was there a better way, something that could bring God and humans together that would be greater than the temple? And Jesus is saying, yes, that is. Did the Pharisees get that? I don't think they were anywhere in that realm of understanding that. To them, the temple was very important. It was a sign of power. Again, the people would come to the Pharisees to learn about the temple, and they would say, have all the regulations about the temple. It was a way, kind of them having power over the people. But Jesus was saying so much more here, wasn't he? Someone greater than the temple is here. The temple was a good thing. It showed how God could meet with men. You had to have sins forgiven. You had to do all the things, you know. The temple was all sorts of pictures of how we learn about God and meeting with him. But the reality of meeting with God was standing there in front of them. Jesus Christ was greater than the temple. You know, I wonder, as Jesus stood in that grain field, what was the most holy place on earth? Was it the temple, or was it the grain field he was standing in? He was God. He was standing right in front of them. And they were talking. They could have talked with him and had a relationship with him right there if they wanted. Verse 7, but if you had known what this means, I desire compassion and not a sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent. That's a quote from Hosea 6:6. This is God saying, he's talking here, I desire compassion and not a sacrifice. Now, I've got to be really careful, and I don't want to say something wrong here. Jesus, is he saying that the law doesn't matter? Is he saying that following God's commandments is not important? No, he would never say that. God's laws are important, and yes, we are supposed to follow them. I mean, that's the whole point of why Jesus had to die on a cross, because he had to save us from our sins. There will be people who will be punished in hell for eternity for breaking God's laws, for not doing what's right. It is important. We don't ignore that. It's not that it's not a big deal. But Jesus is saying that's important, but there's things that are very important to God, and it's compassion. God has compassion, and that's important to him. And a real reading of the real law, and if you take it to logical conclusions, you realize the law is really about love and compassion. Jesus said that. I can sum up the whole law in the word love. Love God, love other people. That's God's law, and that has to do with compassion. So anyway, if you had known what this means, I desire compassion and not a sacrifice. That's God's heart right there. He desires compassion. Not just his compassion for people, but he desires that we have compassion for others. He desired that the leaders of Israel should have compassion for the people that were under them. The Pharisees, the leaders, whoever they were, should be full of compassion. They should be known for that and helping people. And if the disciples are really hungry because they've been helping people for weeks and they just want a little meal, how about instead of harassing them, why don't you give them something to eat? You know, and help them out. Have a little compassion. But that was not them at all. And Jesus tells them this. If you had known, once again, you see he's pointing out that they don't know something. You don't know anything about King David. You don't understand the law. You don't understand God, that he's full of compassion. You don't know much, and all your rules about the Sabbath are crazy. He could have said so much here. He could have really said a lot. And he really doesn't say a whole lot. He just has a few choice words for them. And if that wasn't enough, if they're not offended enough, verse 8, for the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. The Son of Man. Probably one of Jesus' favorite names for himself while he was here on earth. He called himself the Son of Man more than anything else. They knew exactly what he was talking about. The Son of Man was him. The Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. They like to be the ones in charge of what everyone did on the Sabbath. Jesus is saying, well, actually, if there's anyone standing here that's in charge, it's me. Not just because I know more than you, I am the Lord of the Sabbath. An amazing claim. Someone greater than the temple is here. It was Jesus, and the Lord of the Sabbath is standing right in front of you. You might want to listen to him. How do you think that made him feel? Very mad. The Pharisees were not happy. I don't even know if I have the words to say how mad they probably were. And like I said, we're just getting going here. What's Jesus going to do next? Verse 9. Departing from there, where do you think he's going to go now? He was in a field. He made a bunch of the Pharisees mad. They're probably going to go talk to their other guys and just be so mad all day long, stewing over it, won't be able to think straight because they're so mad about it. So Jesus just go, you know, let's go out of town and just give people time to cool down a little bit. Is that what's going to happen here? Departing from there, he went into their synagogue. Well, do you see that, how interesting that is? He went right in to their center. Didn't go to the temple, but close to it, the synagogue, and where the leaders would be. The other Pharisees he hadn't offended yet, maybe. Let's go find them and talk to them, and the Jewish people following them. Jesus is saying, now's the time. I'm confronting you right now. And we're seeing in this chapter, this is a pivotal point in the book of Matthew. Jesus is standing up and saying, okay, let's have it out right now. The words that he's saying here are very powerful against them. And now he's going to show. He just mentioned that God's compassion is the number one thing for God here. And now he's going to show it. Departing from there, he went into their synagogue, and a man was there whose hand was withered. And they questioned Jesus asking, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" So that they might accuse him. In the synagogue, there happened to be a man who had a withered hand. Something wrong with his hand. The Pharisees saw the hand, and they saw it as a means to an end. We could use this guy. Let's put him in front of Jesus. And you know, Jesus, he's so compassionate. He's always wanting to help people. It's just horrible. I can't believe he's always helping people and healing people. He's probably going to want to heal him. And if he heals him, he did it on the Sabbath, and then he's in real trouble. We could get him then. That's the horrible thoughts that they were having. And we're told in Matthew, he says, they did this so that they might accuse him. So they grab the guy with the withered hand and put him in front of Jesus. And Jesus comes in, and sure enough, he has compassion. That guy just always has compassion. Can you believe it? Always. And so he has compassion on the guy. He said to them, "What man is there among you who has a sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will he not take hold of it and lift it out?" So Jesus knows what they're thinking. He knows what's going to happen here. And he's just pointing out another problem with all their thinking about the Sabbath. If you guys have a sheep, it falls into a hole, you know, it could die down there. It's not going to be good for the sheep, right? I'm sure there's rules on the Sabbath. You're not supposed to pull a sheep out of a hole. I think you're not supposed to lift more than a dried fig, is what I read about yesterday. And a sheep weighs a lot more than a dried fig. Maybe if you had 500 guys all lifting one hair of the sheep out at a time, you might be able to get it out without breaking the law. But you would break the law, and everybody would get the sheep out. You just would do it. Now, unfortunately, it's probably not because they cared about the sheep. These Pharisees probably cared more that each sheep represented money. You could sell the sheep for sacrifices, which is, there's so many problems with that as well. They saw it as money, probably, not so much that they cared about the sheep. But they would lose money, or they would lose the sheep, and so they would take it out. On the Sabbath, of all things, can you believe it? They would do work on the Sabbath, and it was okay. But, verse 12, how much more valuable then is a man than a sheep? How much more valuable is a man than a sheep? I hope you all know the answer to this. How much more valuable is a man, a human being, than a sheep? You know, they knew the answer to this. They knew the right answer. I think everybody knows the right answer. Most people. A human being is so much more valuable. Infinitely more valuable. The sheep are great. You know, who wants to see a sheep suffer? But a human being is so much more. And you would take a sheep out of a pit, but you won't help a person. And you do a little work in the process of helping the person on the Sabbath. Jesus is pointing out how crazy their laws are. And the laws really did talk so much about not doing stuff for other people, it did appear that animals were more important. So then, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. It is a good thing to do, to help other people to do good on the Sabbath. Verse 13, then he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and it was restored to normal like the other. A miracle. Jesus did a miracle, an amazing thing, right in front of everybody. Instantaneously, a perfect hand, just like the other one. That's a great thing. There should have been rejoicing and celebration. They should have declared a party right then in the synagogue. Let's all rejoice and sing and dance. This guy's hand is healed. They should have. Everybody should have. The leaders should have said, "Wow." They should have recognized, they should have taken the next step and recognized, who is this Jesus? Maybe he's the Messiah. This was talked about in the Old Testament, that the Messiah would do things just like this. There should have been rejoicing. They should have been putting together God's plan. There should have been a wonderful outcome to this situation. Verse 14, but the Pharisees went out and conspired against him as to how they might destroy him. That's their response. He just healed a man. Amazing. Right in front of them. The very thing the Messiah would do when he comes. And what did they do? They conspired to kill him. I wonder if there is any laws about conspiring to kill somebody on the Sabbath. I wonder if that's all right. The Pharisees went out and conspired against him as to how they might destroy him. And I think, and Ben agreed, and the commentary I read in the message, I said, we all agreed, this verse right there, verse 14, is a pivotal verse in the book of Matthew. The leaders of Israel have officially rejected Jesus. It's become clear over time, and it's still going to work its way out in the next chapters, but this could officially be the spot right here where they officially have rejected the Lord Jesus Christ. The Messiah came, he offered himself to Israel, and the leaders have now rejected him. There's a timeline here. He offered himself to Israel as their king. They rejected him, and now we'll see what happens next. Verse 15. But Jesus, aware of this, withdrew from there. Many followed him, and he healed them all. And he healed them all. He was in the synagogue, the place of worship, should have been the place of the truth. Healing a man in the synagogue, how great that would be. I mean, for everyone to be so excited there, and all they could do is think about how to kill him. So he left the synagogue. He's been officially put out by the leaders of Israel. They have rejected him. So what does he do? He goes out from there. Doesn't even say exactly where he went. You know, he's God. Anywhere he goes is a holy place, right? He went out from there, and many followed him, and he healed them all. Those four words, he healed them all. Can just think about, what does that really even mean? He healed them all. I think it was still the Sabbath, too. He did it on the Sabbath. How much work did he go to? Man, he was working all day long to heal those people. Was he breaking God's law? No, God has compassion. He wants to heal people. He loves people. And Jesus knew that, being God in the flesh, and he healed them all. Verse 16, and he warned them not to tell who he was. This was to fulfill what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet. Behold, my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved, in whom my soul is well pleased, I will put my spirit upon him. He shall proclaim justice to the Gentiles. He will not quarrel nor cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A battered reed he will not break off, and a smoldering wick he will not put out, until he leads justice to victory, and in his name the Gentiles will hope. The fact that Matthew adds this section of Isaiah right here, it kind of shows that, yes, this does seem to be a pivoting point in Jesus' ministry. Verse 16, he warned them not to tell who he was. An interesting situation here. And I will, I'll share something here. You know, it was mentioned earlier, I didn't know I was going to be preaching today until about yesterday sometime. But you know what? God put some things on my mind the last couple of weeks. You know what one of them was? Just out of the blue, I just wanted to study something. It's why did Jesus keep saying not to tell people about who he was? I did some study on that the last couple of weeks, having no idea I was going to be speaking today. And so God put that all together. And so now you're all thinking he's going to have something great to say. I still don't know exactly why he said that. But I studied a lot, and now I can really say with a lot of wisdom behind it that I'm not sure what he's talking about. But anyway, it's neat how he puts those things together. Actually, some other things in here he's put on my mind, it's just neat how that all worked out. He's been officially rejected by the leaders of Israel. So him being presented as the king right now is not going to happen. In Israel, at least according to the leaders. What's he going to do now? Well, he has huge crowds that could follow him. He is healing. Everyone's excited about it. He could draw these large crowds together. Do you think he could amass a really large group of people? He could, actually, right now. What if he healed them and said, go tell all your families to come here. We're going to meet in 5 days. We're going to meet right here. If you were just healed and Jesus told you that, you would go find all your family and you would have them there. He could amass probably 100,000 people maybe or something like that. I'm just throwing that number out. I don't really know the numbers. But he could amass a huge crowd if he wanted to. And would they do whatever he said to do? I think so. Probably he could. But that's not the plan, is it? He had much greater things to accomplish. His plan wasn't to overthrow the Jewish leaders. And the people saw what was going on. They saw the Jewish leaders had rejected him. They saw that something was happening here. But they followed him, not the leaders. At least this crowd did. So anyway, is that what Jesus is going to do? Is he going to go overthrow the leaders? He's got a crowd. They'd probably be happy to follow him in and do it. But he says, no, that's not what's going to happen right now. Is he going to take them and overthrow Rome? No, we're not going to do that right now. And we know that he had a much greater plan, didn't he? Not just to save Israel, but he had a plan to save the world. That's what Isaiah wrote about here. Verse 18, behold my servant whom I have chosen. Think of God the Father as saying this to God the Son. Jesus, he's my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved, in whom my soul is well pleased. God was well pleased. This is what God the Father thinks about God the Son. It's interesting to think here about what did the Pharisees think about Jesus. Pretty much the opposite of that, right? They did not think he was the chosen one. They did not think God's Spirit was inside of him. In fact, it wouldn't be long before they said, you have a demon in you. They were not well pleased with him, and they wanted to kill him. And he shall proclaim justice to the Gentiles. Justice to the Gentiles. Did the Pharisees care about that? I don't think the word justice was in their vocabulary. They did not care about justice. They cared about power. And do they care about the Gentiles? No. He will not quarrel, nor cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. I think that's why Matthew puts this right here in this passage. And Matthew is explaining to us, you see, Isaiah said he's not going to go be loud in the streets trying to gather a big crowd of people. And that's not what he's doing here. He said, don't tell anybody about this. Nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A battered reed he will not break off. That could mean like the people who are frail, people who are needy, he won't just break them off. Maybe like a guy with a withered hand. He wouldn't just write him off. Like the Pharisees did. Do you notice they used him as a pawn? And when he was healed, they were mad about it. That's terrible. Jesus was not that way. He cares about the needy. A battered reed he will not break off. A smoldering wick he will not put out. That might be a picture of people with small faith, people that are hanging on to what they know about God amidst all the burden of the Pharisees that have been placed on them. Well, he will not put that out. He won't do what the Pharisees did and put a whole nother pile of laws on people just designed to break them. He will perhaps fan that wick into something more and not put it out. Until he leads justice to victory. He's all about justice, and he will eventually have a victory. Will he get it by running around in the streets yelling, let's go get him? No. He's going to have victory a much different way, isn't he? A much greater way that we can be thankful for. 21, and in his name the Gentiles will hope. Jesus presented himself to Israel. The leaders had rejected him, and it seems like there's an official rejection here. He will still talk to Israel. He's not doing a complete 180 at this moment in time. But if we look ahead in the next chapters, we're going to learn all about the kingdom of God for a long time here. And if you notice all the things he says, the Gentiles could be included in all that. So there are hints in the next chapters that this is not just Israel he came to save. It's the whole world that he came to save. As I said, I wanted to close by going in back and reading Matthew chapter 11, the words that he said here. And maybe after thinking about all these things, maybe this might have even more meaning here. Matthew 11, 28. Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, For I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. The kingdom of God is not about a religion. It's not about trying to follow a list of rules made by humans. If you're trying to do that, you'll never get anywhere. You're just going to have more of a burden on yourself. You might feel religious now and then, but that's not going to save you, and that won't find rest for your souls. But Jesus said, you can have true rest for your souls. Forget all that religious stuff and just come to Jesus. Amen.